Okay, good morning, everyone. Happy Wednesday. Welcome to the ISP Task Force. Quick roll call and we'll get started. Ken Kawamoto?
Here.
Stephen Lane?
Good morning.
Anil Jain?
Good morning.
Arian Malik? Andy Trescott? Clint McDonald? Cynthia Fisher? David? No. Sorry, I do believe Cynthia is on. David McCauley?
Here.
Edward Jones? Carrie O'Malley?
Here.
Leslie Leonard?
Here. Yep.
Jack Poe? Raj Ratwani? Ram Sriram?
Yes, present.
Thank you. Ricky Bloomfield? Sasha Termott?
Good morning.
Pat Weingarten. Carol Turney. Tamer Bracowie. Tina Esposito. Valerie Gray. Victor Lee. Okay. With that, I will hand it over to our co-chairs to get us started.
Excellent. Thank you so much and welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us for our meeting. Can you hear me all right? I'm on a speakerphone.
Yes, we can hear you.
Excellent. Great. So our plan today is to go ahead and just go over our task force schedule a bit, and then we're going to dive right into a review of the first third of our draft report. The ONC team has been hard at work translating all of our efforts that had been documented in spreadsheet format into a report format. You'll see, or hopefully many of you have seen, that there's a nice introduction. So the idea here is that we can go ahead and go to the schedule perhaps, is we've got a few meetings lined up that will allow us to go through the report and to assure that it represents our best thinking and recommendations. I did want to give everyone a chance to review the work that we've done, to think about whether, this is our chance to make any adjustments, additions, subtractions, and to assure that we have things worded just the way we want them to be. So I think the way we're gonna do it is spend this meeting talking about the orders and results. You guys will still have some time to go through that again afterwards and submit comments or suggestions if you'd like, but also between now and the next meeting, we're gonna hopefully start to collect comments on the second section on referrals and care coordination. And then we'll spend the subsequent meeting looking back at our medication and pharmacy data recommendations. And then I think we're going to have one more meeting to wrap things up before we bring the draft recommendations to the HITAC, and then a bit of time to incorporate any suggestions or revisions that they have provided, and then be ready to present the final recommendations. So that's kind of the overview of where we're going from here. Any questions about that? Great. Again, a number of people did have a chance to go into the document and start submitting suggested edits and some comments, and we'll go through those. But obviously, there are almost certainly some who have not done that, and this will be your chance. And again, you can follow up with additional comments after this, and we'll try to sort of go back and catch up with ourselves at the beginning of the next meeting. I think I went a little out of order, so let's just sort of scroll back up and let's see what I missed in the slides that you guys skipped over. So just again to remind everyone, especially those who are visiting from the public who perhaps haven't been with us before, our Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force has a charge to make recommendations on priority uses of health information technology and the associated standards and implementation specifications that support such uses. And we are going to be making recommendations about those priority uses, standards, implementation specifications, subsequent steps for industry and government action, and then publishing a report. So we're at number two right now in this, working on that report that we will be publishing. And I'm pretty sure we went through, next slide, the membership as we took our role. So just as again, as a reminder for the public, this is who is on our task force. And then I think from there, Ken, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think what we'd like to do is just go through the draft report and start seeing what we want to present to the HITAC and before we make any recommendations based on the larger group's feedback. It should be fairly straightforward in the sense that we basically took the data from our spreadsheet work that we've done and transposed it to a narrative format. But I say we just jump right in there if that's okay. Let's see, could we get the Google spreadsheet and Google Doc to show up?
And while that's coming up, I'll just add a particular welcome to the members of the public who are joining us. Looking at the participant list, I see there's quite a few people who've joined, some with names I don't recognize from prior meetings, so welcome, and feel free to use the chat and public comment window to provide your input as we go along. All of that input is recorded and published with the minutes of our meetings. And then at the end, there will be an opportunity for you to get on the line and give us public comment verbally.
Okay, let's open up the spreadsheet.
It's the document.
Sorry, the document.
Yeah,
the document.
They've got it up.
Okay. All right. So why don't we start from the top? The top parts are pretty much just front matter, so it should be fairly non-controversial.
Well, one question that I had, Ken, is I don't think we've done a lot of work on the title or the subtitle or any of that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you can scroll back up to that very first page here, if you will. And this report, this title, I think, was suggested by the ONC team. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've said anything about it. So any thoughts that people have about the title, feel free to let us know. I don't think this is set in stone at this point.
Okay. Any comments on the title, Setting Priorities for Standards Adoption Report?
We're going to need a subtitle to say, report of the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force or something like that. But we'll work with the ONC team to make sure that that's appropriate and meets their needs.
Yeah, and I guess big picture, this kind of front matter too, if folks just want to comment on it offline as well, you're welcome to. And then for the task force members, we sent out a Google Doc link. Anyone with the link should be able to suggest comments, so please feel free to do that. So if you have a copy open on your end, you can just directly basically type in, it'll enable track changes mode.
Actually, Sasha, do you want to display the web meeting?
Yeah, display that there.
Oh, that's perfect.
Then I can have the document up too. Okay, good.
Okay. So why don't we just go through the initial front matter part, and again, the title, et cetera, I think we can just sort of do offline, and please feel free if you think something's better, just rip and replace, and it'll just come in as draft changes. So nothing too exciting about the top-level front matter. We talk about in the executive summary, 21st Century Cures Act requires the HIT Advisory Committee in collaboration with the NIST to annually and through the use of public input, review and publish priorities for the use of the health IT and the standards and implementation specifications to support those priorities. This report meets that directive by summarizing the activities of the ISP task force between fall 2018 and fall 2019, describing the priorities, recommendations, suggestions, suggested policy actions for ONC consideration. Again, if you see anything that doesn't seem right, please feel free to comment or just directly edit. Overview, the high-tech standards adoption priorities were identified under Section 3003 of the 21st Century Cures Act, and we'll just read through it in the sense that we do need to review it, and it's probably the easiest way for folks to review it at this point. As implementation of the incentive programs for the meaningful use and certified EHR technology, the MIPS, alternate payment models, the hospital value-based purchasing program, and any other value-based payment program determined appropriate by the Secretary of Health and Human Services, there's a space needed there. More specifically, the priorities are related to quality of patient care, public health, clinical research, privacy and security of electronic health information, innovation in the field of HIT, patient safety, usability, access to electronic health information, other priorities determined appropriate by the Secretary. So these are all sort of boilerplate because this is our charge. In identifying such standards and implementation specifications as stated above, the HITECH was charged to prioritize the selected standards and implementation specifications developed by consensus-based standards development organizations. Stated in the CURES Act, beginning 5 years after the date of enactment of the Act and every 3 years after, the National Coordinator shall convene stakeholders to review the existing set of adopted standards and implementation specifications and make recommendations with respect to whether to maintain or phase out the use of such standards and implementation specs. The HITECH, in collaboration with the NIST, shall review and publish priorities annually through the use of public input, HIT standards and implementation specs. So just a query to the ONC staff who prepared the section. This is just regulatory kind of background. But one question I had when I was reading this too, it says that the priorities need to be published annually. That's not necessarily something that the ISP task force is charged with, I'm assuming, because we're going to be wrapping this task force with potential consideration of continuing it, right? Because if the language says annually, the HITECH must do that, and because it shows up in the ISP task force, I just don't want to make it seem that it's the purview of the ISP task force to do that on an annual basis, given that we will be wrapping up this year. Is that just want to clarify, that's not part of our scope, right, for HITECH and the ISP task force? Okay. Maybe the request there is, maybe Lauren, if you could just verify that obviously everything stated regarding what we're required to do, et cetera, is in fact.
This is Lauren. Verify, but pretty good shape so far. Sorry. I think I hear someone else trying to chime in. Okay. Sorry about that.
Okay. All right. So let's keep moving. Let's maybe go to go further down the overview because we don't have that much front matter, but let's get through it and get into the content. Can we scroll down? Overarching task force, keep going down. Going down.
I think we need to go through the overarching charge, don't we?
I thought we went through that, no?
Oh, I thought you just did the overview.
Oh, no, sorry. Can you go up to where we, sorry. Can you go back up a little bit on the Google Doc?
We want to do section 3.
Section 3. Yeah, okay. Okay, so this part again talks about what we did. As indicated in Section 3003 of the Public Health Services Act, the ISP Task Force is established by the HITECH in charge to identify priority uses of HIT consistent with the CURES Act to identify priority standards and specifications that best support or may need to be developed for each identified priority and subsequent steps for industry and government action. In the identification of priority standards and implementation specs, the CURES Act specifies that the standards that were developed by the consensus-based methods used by standards development organizations should be highest priority. During the initial meetings, and if you can scroll down a little bit so we can read further. Maybe there's a delay. Yeah. The task force discussed the mission charge, and the members then identified higher priority uses of health IT and rank ordered them through a voting process. Following this ranking group discussion of the results, the task force decided by consensus to focus on the three uses below. If given more time, the task force could explore and make recommendations regarding the additional uses in future deliberation. The task force was charged to publish a report on its findings and make recommendations to the larger HITECH. So this is basically, so if you disagree with any of that, what was stated, please bring it up now. But as you recall, we asked each member to bring up what they felt were priorities, and then we discussed them, and then we voted on them, discussed them some more, and I think through consensus came up with the top three that we wanted to tackle first, which ended up being what we were able to get through during the scope of life of the task force this year. So priorities of health IT addressed in this report are orders and results, closed-loop referrals and care coordination, and medication pharmacy data. And additional priority uses recommended for future consideration include evidence-based care for common chronic conditions, social determinants of health, and cost transparency, with the note that this topic was a central focus for the medication pharmacy use above. Does that sound about right?
And I'll just acknowledge that a number of you went through and made some suggested edits, and we've gone through and just accepted those as they've come in.
Okay.
Any edits, just by the way, that we've made that are even potentially substantive, we've highlighted in alternate colors for discussion with the group. For the most part, you know, your co-chairs felt that this was largely non-controversial.
Okay. And
can you please read the last two
yeah.
three sentences regarding transparency? I couldn't hear from
yeah.
the speakerphone. Thank you. Please.
Yeah. Yeah. The last one we said cost transparency, and we said parentheses note, this topic was a central focus for the medication/pharmacy use above.
So you're talking about cost transparency. Is that correct?
Yeah, if you recall, like that was one of the ones that bubbled up as one of the priorities identified in the in this task force as a standalone topic, and one that we were planning to go through if we had the time and effort. It just, you know, the IHP task force is currently cycled to at least this iteration cycled to end in the next several months. So we're recommending that these topics be further discussed and, you know, deliberated on by the task force if its life is extended beyond this year. But we're also noting that cost transparency really was a big part of the medication one.
Yes, I would just like to add that being that it is the most impactful to families and to compliance of understanding the price. I mean, we can use the examples of insulin costs going up by a magnitude of four to five times for people, and knowledge of new medications rather than old depleting their monthly outflow and not necessarily being covered. I think insulin is one of the most impactful examples. The issue that I would like to see changed from the task force standpoint is that what's listed on the slide is total out-of-pocket costs as it relates to the patient. But, you know, I think it's really imperative that we look at the entire price of the pharmaceutical and the drug outlay choices.
Yeah, Cynthia?
Yeah.
At this point, we're really just going through the text of the introduction of our report. We have incorporated those comments in the detail that we're going to actually get to in 2 weeks' time. So hold that thought, and we'll make sure that we captured, because we've discussed that, obviously, and I think we've captured that in our recommendations, and we'll get to that when we get to that section.
Well, I think it was just, Stephen, I think it was just the header only had out-of-pocket costs on it, and I didn't see it delineated to see total prices, because the total prices affect the coverage cost, and
yeah,
the patient
share
30%
that.
Of that.
So all we've got here is just cost transparency as a section that we're commenting on.
Yeah,
okay, well, I'm adding it to what is in bold on the slide that we add. I'm asking for the task force to add total price transparency, not just out of pocket,
as our coverage because of the impact to health plans and health coverage. And if patients see a total price, then they can help drive down their coverage costs and their employers can also incentivize toward reducing coverage costs. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm asking that we change it to be inclusive of total price as well as out-of-pocket.
Yeah, we don't specifically talk out-of-pocket here. Maybe we're desynced on what you're looking at versus what we're looking at, but I think the appropriate place to put that would be under our meds comments. We definitely talked about out-of-pocket there. We did not include an explicit discussion to say, and of course, total cost matters because, you know, when total cost increases, like, you know, obviously eventually catches up to us. Maybe if you can go, I think we already have those recommendations in there, or we will shortly. If you wouldn't mind going in and directly adding those in as suggested edits to that section, which we will cover in 2 weeks. And also, I mean, I'm sure we won't forget when we get there. So if you didn't put it in, we can cover it when we get to that.
But yeah, I think it's just that, just out of courtesy, I've just brought it up at several meetings, and it doesn't appear to ever get changed. And I'm not able to enter into a computer right now, but I would just like to say that we also need to use nomenclature of price because there's an argument that costs people don't want to disclose their own costs, but it is really about price transparency. And I think the nomenclature is important and not confusing. So what is, you know, what is the out-of-pocket price to the consumer and what is the total price so we can reduce the total coverage by both employer and patient employee alike? Thank you. But I think we really need to, just, if I could ask someone on the ONC team to please edit that or add it to it, I would ask that on behalf of
We can get to, and just as a note, Cynthia, we have very explicitly addressed and incorporated your comments in the past. And in the past, I think your primary comment was what's really important to the patient is how much they pay out of pocket. And that's where the emphasis there had come. I think this is the first time I recall the notion of, but, you know, equally important is the total price. So just to note, this is the first time I've heard that.
No, I disagree with you, and maybe that's been a misunderstanding, but the total price is really needed because it affects the entire outflow of coverage, which has gone up north of 8, almost double digits for small businesses, and north of 8% for large businesses. So we're talking 8 to 12, 13% increases annually. So the only way the patient can deploy that and the employer can shop is to see total prices. So let's make sure we're, you know, responsibly looking at, you know, addressing the entire transparency issue.
Yeah,
not
that's
just
great, Cynthia. We absolutely will have a chance to do that 2 weeks from now. So let's proceed. It's our review of the document that we've got posted and that we're displaying here so that we can be sure to get everybody's input on this.
And Clem is copying, putting some comments in, so we'll maybe try to monitor that as well. Let's move on to
section four.
Yeah, the next section. Okay, so this is just membership. I think it should be non-controversial. If you can just move through this, and if you don't like the way you're characterized or whatnot, just please feel free to direct the edit. And then, section five, task force recommendations development. So this is basically the approach we're saying we're taking. So the following recommendations were proposed by the ISP task force and endorsed by the full HITAC following review, discussion, modification. Of course, we're assuming that that'll happen, but we're just putting the wording, which hopefully will be true once they do review, discuss, and modify. And then for each area this report provides, and this is sort of the way we were thinking about it, we started with a story that illustrates how the recommendations, if adopted, can improve health and healthcare. I think this was a comment from one of the task force members. I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was David. But the notion that, like, hey, this is a bunch of tax. Let's put it into context with a story. And then tier one issues along with recommendations, observations and recommendations, and potential policy levers. These are the top issues the HITAC recommends addressing. And again, we're speaking in terms of the HITAC, assuming that'll come through because the way this works, the task force provides proposed recommendations, and the HITECH actually is the one that makes the recommendations, and then Tier 2 issues. And we say these are also important issues in the view of the HITECH, but with less urgency compared to the Tier 1 issues. And then we put in here for reference source spreadsheets, which will be removed later, but just to reference. Okay, and so let's go into the Section 6 HITECH recommendations, orders, and results. So as just noted, we're starting with the story, and then after that, it's essentially the content we've developed as a task force, literally just transposed into a document format. So let's start with this one. So illustrative story of what recommendations will enable. And the idea here was, you know, for the public, for policymakers, et cetera, just, you know, make it less dry and more impactful in terms of the description. So, and this is subject to any editing folks want. So after getting your annual laboratory test completed, you receive an email notification the next day that your results are available in your personal health record. You open the results on your smartphone, PHR application, and can see all the results, including,
Normal ranges.
Normal ranges, with the note that the data were provided to you as soon as it was available, and that your doctor may not yet have reviewed the results. Because all laboratory tests are now encoded using a standard known as LOINC, there are standard patient-friendly test names and information resources that have been linked to them. For example, for your slightly low calcium level, there's a link to the Medline Plus resource that explains the significance of this minor abnormality. By the afternoon, your doctor has added a note of which you're notified to not worry about the slightly low calcium, as it is likely due to your kidney disease, is unchanged from your previous results, and will be checked again later. Your doctor is easily able to trend your lab result data on a graph, including data obtained from your other care providers, because each laboratory result is LOINC encoded, enabling similar lab tests obtained from across the healthcare system to be displayed and trended together, something that was not possible until recently through a public-private partnership. So this is what we had. We had a few comments come in. For the folks who are on, I don't know if Ming, Andy, if you're on, if you and any others, maybe you can directly discuss the comments you put in.
I think Jax is the first comment. I don't know if he's on the line, but I just
yeah.
added, including appropriately personalized normal ranges. As a way of capturing what he was after, if people are comfortable with
that. Yeah, I'm on the line, and I saw that you made that edit right before my comments. I was like, I get this solved.
Is that, just to clarify, would that supersede the normal ranges provided by the lab?
Well, labs often do personalize normal ranges.
Okay, so
by age. Yeah, I mean, Jack pointed out ethnicity, which is probably not what most labs do today, but I think increasingly we do see labs, you know, certainly for age and gender, there are personalizations that occur.
Yeah, there's a bigger section later that talks about including normal ranges. The reason why I pointed out ethnicity is because most labs don't do that today, and lots of times physicians will just reinterpret themselves. But I felt like if the use case is going to go directly to the patients, which this use case talks about, if we don't do it by ethnicity, we're going to freak out lots of patients.
Yeah, I think at this point in our deliberations, we probably don't have time to incorporate something that significant.
That would be a pretty significant ask.
Yeah, it would be a pretty significant ask. I definitely would think it would be a level two, tier two sort of an ask. Are you comfortable with this insertion of the appropriately personalized as a way to kind of incorporate these ideas?
This is fun. Okay, just be careful, because some labs only have an accession number for the test sample and cannot personalize.
Right.
Yeah. And I think ideally what we want the story to be is something that would happen if the if the recommendations we put in were to come true.
Right.
And we should make sure those are in good shape, and then we should maybe put in a parking lot some of these additional ideas that we could add if we have more time.
And I think that I have a similar response to Andy's comment. He raised the issue of machine learning produced CDS note, which again sounds really exciting, and isn't something that we spend a lot of time talking about. You know, while I like the idea of us being able to make some tweaks at this point in the process, I don't know that we have time to really dig into and fully discuss, you know, substantial new ideas, you know, like ethnicity normal ranges and machine learning CDS. So my tendency personally is to sort of, you know, accept these as great ideas, but not think that we have time to incorporate them now. Yeah. Okay. Andy, are you on? Is that okay with you?
Well, this is Clem. I think it's the only plausible pathway given the time frames.
Thanks, Clem.
Hey, it's David. Are we doing the hand raising, or do you just want us to speak up?
Yeah, we should check for hand raising.
Yeah, I'm sorry, David. Go ahead. We don't have enough monitors is the problem.
Yeah, no problem. We can do it either way. Just need to be consistent. My comment, one is that we should maybe review our observation points and recommendations and then come back and look at the story and make sure that the story encompasses the things that we recommended and doesn't introduce, you know, cool ideas that we didn't include in our discussion. So I think the story is a good idea, but let's make sure we look back at the story after we review the individual points. That was kind of just process observation number one. And then suggestion number two is, and I'm going to violate my own recommendation there, and just, you know, point out that I think one of the issues with LOINC is there's more necessary than just mapping to LOINC, because you can map many. There are many different kinds of LOINC, many different LOINC codes available for a given test. So one of the goals here, if the main goal is comparability, then there may be work beyond just mapping to LOINC, and maybe that's a detail that we should not dive into, but that's been the pain point in the LOINC discussions that I've been part of, particularly in FHIR,
David,
for example. Yeah.
David, we do acknowledge that further down, and you're exactly right. We got to the point of agreeing that LOINC was critical, was necessary, but probably not sufficient, and we do acknowledge that further down. So you can look at how we worded that and see if you're comfortable with it.
Yeah, and I think the point of the story isn't that every single recommendation is incorporated, because that would become a very unwieldy story. The point of the story is to take some of the main gists of what we were after and to put in the story.
That's the point I wanted to just say. Comparability is the single word that would capture that notion that mapping is not sufficient. You need to be able to compare your results. So linking and comparing or something like that. That's where I was headed with that long-winded detour.
I think it's sort of illustrated by the notion of you're going to be able to trend the results, because that implies things like if the values for different LOINCs are not really, you know, they use different units, et cetera, that you're using intelligence to put it into the right scale, that kind of thing, right? Like you could have a LOINC code that's in, you know, moles per liter and another that's in milligrams per deciliter, and obviously you would need to convert between them and make them comparable if to really make that work. But
I like the change. I like the change that just was added there. That's good. I'm happy.
Okay. All right. Let's maybe move on, if it's okay, to the task one issues and recommendations. And there it's or sorry, tier one issues and recommendations. What we did was basically take the content that was in the spreadsheets we came up with. The ones we labeled tier one just comes under tier one, the tier two is tier two. And the only thing we pretty much added was the boldface need for consistent encoding of test results, the equivalent of, we didn't have like a summary text for a given row. So these should all look extremely familiar, because they're in fact exactly what this task force had worked on in the past. This is really, I guess, just a, you know, another review opportunity before we submit it to the HITAP for consideration.
So here you can see that Andy provided a comment suggesting some reference to semantic versus syntactic interoperability. I took about half of that and added it to the observation in this green text. Is there anyone who's uncomfortable with that? Great. Okay. Thank you, Andy.
So I guess the question here is, what would folks prefer? Should we just read through them? Should we skim through them? Should we review it on our own? I ask this simply because we have already reviewed these fairly extensively in the past.
Ken, I think we should skim through them because my initial questions were answered when we got deeper. And then we can kind of, I think it would be more efficient to see the whole picture before we fuss too much.
Yeah, okay. So let's kind of briefly go through them. So how about both of you, I know Cynthia, maybe perhaps some others are on phone only. So I'll just very quickly skim through it and sort of give a verbal update. So the first one, need for consistent encoding of test results, observation, is that a lot labs and other test results are not consistently encoded with appropriate standard codes, which is obviously a problem. Recommendation is that resulting organizations should provide link codes as identifiers. So that's a key one. Also that when result observations is coded, the values should try to use SNOMED CT. Third point was in the case of labs, that this should be something that CLIA considers to be something that's enforced under their regulations. And that if it's ineffective, then we should consider making this a condition of payment. So this was a very strong one, but we deliberated pretty extensively on it. The other recommendations include assure that there is a well-managed appropriate resource process to develop and deliver additional LOIN codes when needed, require and enforce the use of information models and terminology standards for all test orders and results, and then EHRs, other systems should be required to provide a standard mechanism, standardized mechanisms that allows basically an interim solution when this is not all done at the source to map internally generated results. And then if you could scroll down, and codes the standard vocabularies. Second from the bottom recommendation, prioritize complete and accurate coding at the data source rather than trying to code or correct externally sourced data downstream, and implement mechanisms to support and ensure proper link and SNOMED CT encoding by resulting agencies. So
hopefully all of this is familiar to the task force members because we went through this in detail.
And then Sasha, the addition of standardized implied there's a standard for mapping tools described.
I was just commenting on Andy's comment, I think, adding
yeah.
standardized to the mapping internally generated results.
Yeah.
Certainly you would map to a standard such as Link or SNOMED, but I'm not aware of a standard
yeah,
for a mapping mechanism, so the word didn't make sense to me in that context.
Andy, can you explain? I do think we probably need to strike that because I don't understand it either.
I don't think Andy's here to speak for himself, so we'll take it out.
I think it has to be struck, yeah.
Yeah. He also added the comment above, operated by whom, and I think this was in reference to this notion of a well-managed and appropriately resourced process to develop and deliver additional LOINC codes. I think we certainly have worked with Regenstrief and the LOINC group. I have presumed in my mind that they would be the ones who would be responsible for delivering and developing additional LOINC codes as needed. Does it make sense to?
It's Regenstrief that does run
right.
These, that
right? does LOINC, right?
And they said, yeah, if we're funded to do something, we can put more resources to it, right?
So maybe that belongs under the responsibility section.
If we scroll down, we have the policy levers / responsibility section. We call out ONC, FDA, and CMS. So I guess we would we say that ONC would work with the Regent Street Institute to assure that there's a process for...
I mean, there is a process. It just takes 6 to 12 months right now, right? I mean, to get a new link code in. But I don't know if money is going to make it much faster than 6 months.
It's a deliberative process.
Yeah.
But I have to make sure it's right.
I mean, money always helps, right? But
so are we comfortable, again, Andy not being here to speak for himself. I mean, his question is really just, is it worth stating who would be responsible for that?
It does seem that the recommendations we've made that identify the actors are stronger to read than the assure and require and enforce ones that are right next to each other that don't identify who would be taking those actions. And so I think I kind of sympathize with Andy's comment. I think if we could identify who we would be recommending this to, whether it's ONC or Regent Street or the formation of a new group or something, those would probably be stronger recommendations with a specified actor.
Yeah. And I see David has his hands up, I think, and I think there's a comment that Clem had it earlier up as well. Maybe David, then Clem.
Yeah, so I don't, I guess if we're just wordsmithing, I'm okay with what we've got. My concern is that the barrier to achieving the goal that we outlined in the story of comparability is not necessarily handled by just saying mapping. And here's my example is, you know, as most of you know, the AMA spent the better part of a year and lots of money to simply get agreement on which LOINC code should be used to describe blood pressure in an ambulatory capture setting with personal devices. That's one lab result, and that's how much work it took to get an agreement. It wasn't the problem of no LOINC codes existed. The problem was which LOINC codes are relevant to which clinical scenarios. And so the concept there of the information model begins to get at that, but I don't think we should underestimate the pain required to do that right, the cost required to do that right.
I see. And if I remember correctly, I was looking at this recently, LOINC is actually missing some codes, I think, still for things like, you know, not in-office blood pressure readings that you want to make sure we record. Yeah, you're right. Like, even just blood pressure gets really, really, I mean, it becomes a major project. I guess, though, I don't know how you would express that differently in the recommendations. So we have as necessary support the work we're going to develop and deliver additional LOINC codes to accommodate. I guess it's additional LOINC codes and industry best practices for using them. Is that what you're getting at, David? The notion that you could have, like, you know, 8 codes that could be relevant, and what's important is everybody agrees this is when you use this one and this is when you use this one, that kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe the notion there is that on the line about information require and enforce the use of information models, maybe it should be more along the lines of work with appropriate clinical expertise to define and require the use of information models.
Because I
think that's where the gap is today, is every lab, every hospital can code, they can find a LOINC code to match the way they chose to describe the result. But that doesn't solve the comparability problem. It's the Stan Huff problem, you know. It's what Stan spent his whole career working on. He would be upset that we don't have that covered here, I think.
Could I comment on this?
Yes, please.
Because I think Dave's wrong to start with. The problem is what's the same is in the eye of the beholder. So, you know, an average clinician doesn't care very much about whether a blood count is done by auto or manual methods, but the lab does. So what we really need is sort of a way to map them together in equivalence classes so people can roll them up when they don't care and they can get to the details when they do. And then the other issue is that different groups, and this is a tough problem, and it might be what Dave's talking about, different groups will model things differently, you know, how they organize things as a set of answers or one answer, and that really needs aggregation of the interest parties to come up with a single way, which is a different problem. It might be what the AMA did.
Clim, I'm not suggesting that the lab necessarily is responsible for this, but to do the mapping that you referred to requires an information model, which requires clinical agreement on how to, in fact, map these things together. Whether that's done at the lab or downstream, it is a gap today that makes the story that we described not achievable.
I think at the lab level, it's not as much of a problem as in the general clinical level. There are issues because some people will insist that a given method is very different from another method, where it's maybe 5% different, and does that count in clinical care? So I think the lab will work out all right. They've got Livid, and their industry is kind of getting together on how they decide things, the instrument vendors, which is upstream, which is the right place. But it's complicated because labs have laboratory-developed tests too. But you have to negotiate with the labs because they're the ones that know what they're doing. But the lab's easy because they have an FDA approval process. They have some strictness. It's the general clinical areas that are hard.
Sasha, did you have a comment?
Well, I was just going to say, I think from the quality reporting perspective, we've encountered both of the challenges Clem and David were identifying. Sometimes the codes are too specific to be comparable in the way that you want. Sometimes they're too generalized to actually promote meaningful comparability between tests in the same code category, and it seems like we kind of need best practices on sort of how specific to be with the original coding for the intended comparability among different audiences, and then also some sort of informatics hierarchy about when you could effectively compare things across different codes for particular audiences.
I'm just thinking, how
is there another recommendation that needs to be added? Because we came to this same observation earlier, but we haven't really specifically addressed it.
Well, I think that the gist of it is that simple mapping to LOINC is not sufficient. You need that information model. And, you know, that's substituting a vague word for a complex space. But to me, that's the call out here is it's not sufficient just to map to a LOINC code. To make this information comparable and useful, particularly to consumers, you need additional layers of knowledge not included in LOINC, which is where that, I think, that information model is kind of a placeholder for.
If you scroll down, we have one in, if you go to the bottom of page 11, maybe we can scroll down there. We do have, I think, we have a recommendation around this. The bottom, page 11, standard code sets are not unique. Page 11, bottom of page 11. No, it's further down. On mine, actually, it says 11 on the document. It could be a different page number on the side. Page 12, according to this, if you go further down, because we have a title page. Here it is. It's at the bottom of the screen. Do you see that? It says standard code sets are not unique or sufficiently granular to determine the clinical equivalency of tests. I think, David, this is, I presume this might have actually come from you too, in our deliberations. Maybe we can scroll down a little bit.
If it did, I didn't word it very well.
Yeah, we could reword it for sure.
I think that, and maybe this is a rat hole that we don't need to go down, but the LOINC is a highly granular nomenclature, as is necessary, because what labs do is highly granular. What's missing is a layer above that, add the semantic meaning for comparability. So the granularity isn't the real, to me, the granularity problem is essentially being solved by LOINC. It's what happens above that is more of a challenge still.
I think I added this one based on experiences of my colleagues, because the use of insufficiently granular codes was so risky as a safety issue, that we were focused on it in particular, even though I think, you know, from a usability perspective, the use of overly granular codes and the inability to map those together might be more significant, David. I guess, like to see us address both, if possible.
Yeah, I you've got to have the granularity, absolutely. I'm just saying the gap that I'm describing is not solved by increasing granularity. That won't make the problem go away of comparability.
Yeah, I agree. You need a roll-up.
Right. That's what I'm calling an information model. Because
yeah.
It does things like, you know, an information model says if you're describing a wound culture, for example, do you describe a generic test called wound culture and then a subcategory called source of the specimen, or do you in fact have, you know, knee aspirate as a test? You know, Loinc has both choices. Which is the right way to do it if you want to, you know, query a system to say, were there any positive cultures? The models don't work very well when you have nothing but granularity. You can't do those higher level functions. But,
so David, I think we get it, but we're
okay.
Trying to get the language right. And again, if you look at this section that's displaying on the screen, I think we would welcome additional suggestions to the wording so that we're capturing what you're trying to say. I think this is a really good start, but it may not have everything that you're after.
And for me to comment, I think it's I think clearly the low-hanging fruit is 50% of labs aren't Loinc encoded, right? Like that was like the big picture
right.
issue of like a hemoglobin A1C or whatever. I think the point David brings up is particularly important. And he brought up the example of specimen source. That's a really common example. Another one might be like, you know, urine tests where the hours of collection may be, you know, you could either order a 24, like the result could be the Loinc code could be 24-hour urine volume, or it could be urine volume combined in an information model with the hours of collection, right? So, I mean, that's, I guess, big picture, I would describe that as the decision to whether pre-coordinate or post-coordinate, you know, observations and, you know, the associated codes is one where there's no clear right answer. And for more complex observations, it's an issue because it could be done in multiple different ways and none of them are actually wrong. It's just different approaches to doing it. I think the question is, you know, and I don't think we've addressed it here, is it a primary or secondary additional recommendation, or do we feel that it's something that, I mean, because the way to address that is, for example, to create, you know, industry consensus on the detailed clinical models that should be done and then to try to propagate that through the system, at least, you know, to say when we communicate it across systems and we talk about, you know, an example we're looking at now is like LDH from pleural fluid. You know, do we try to create a Loinc code for LDH pleural fluid and make sure that a lab which receives a specimen from a fluid source and reports it uses this new Loinc code instead of saying here's the, you know, LDH from body fluid and the fluid source we're going to call pleural fluid? Or is it going to be the, you know, downstream groups mapped to it? Like, but there's a lot of implications of changing from current practice. So I don't know. I mean, we see it and we struggle with it, but it's certainly not in the 80 or 90% issue, I think. I think that particular issue tends to be more of a 10% issue because most observations can be sort of, you know, pre-coordinated with a single code, and it typically is done that way.
And I'm going to move this subsection up so it's where it came up in our conversation underneath the need for coding in the first place, just so it flows more logically. But David, please do dig into this, you know, sleep on it and see if you can refine the language to make it clearer.
Okay, I'll take a look.
Thank you.
And Ken, Ken's description was good. That was a good example, Ken. I appreciate. Thank you for that.
Oh, it's really hard because like there literally is no right answer.
I spent the better part of the last third of my career at Cerner trying to solve the problem. It's really hard. So.
Okay. I wonder if one thing we could do is start marking things that we've reviewed as a group, like, say, in highlight green or something, and then try to – one approach to do this is maybe go for ones that we think are relatively non-controversial and get those all greened. That way, it would be nice if, say, 80-90% of our recommendations are ready to go to HITAC, and then there's, like, a 10-20% we can delve in, if that makes sense. So perhaps we should almost purposely choose the ones that probably are simplest or least controversial, at least within the task force.
Also, I think it's worth pointing out that, you know, we don't have all the time in the world. We have three more meetings after this before we go to HITAC. So we need to be selective in how we invest our time and invite people to provide comments offline that we can then review together. So I think at the very least, we should get through all the comments on this section that people have submitted so that we can hear them out.
Yeah. Do we have many other comments, Stephen? Do you remember?
Well, I think we want to be at the results need to be sent to clinicians in codified format. Jack had a comment there.
Okay. What page would that be on?
Looks like we're on page 8 of 32.
Right.
Sorry, that was more of a comment about how annoying that problem is. I think what you guys wrote is perfectly fine.
This was your comment about DICOM, Jack.
Sorry. You guys scrolled past that comment. The comment about DICOM was more that the, I think, example section, or just slightly earlier, you guys mentioned imaging.
Right.
You mentioned imaging, that we would have to mention DICOM given the other standards that you guys listed.
I think there was a public comment on that as well. That's a good question. So I guess because link is often used for things like even for imaging result types, I guess, you know, obviously labs has been sort of our main focus, but
we do care about other categories. I'm wondering though where you put it, Jack. So the recommendation is to utilize USCDI to assure that prioritized results are interoperable via V2, CCDA, and FHIR. I mean, DICOM isn't part of that family of methods for transport.
So just could I just clarify, DICOM is a standard for the image and the things related to making the image and a few other things. It really isn't big into identifying the studies. So there's actually ACR, NEMA, and Reagan Street collaborated to make test names for radiology studies. And for the text report, that's what you need.
Yeah, so there's a section actually later that talks about that. For example, I think exactly as Clem, you just mentioned, there needs to be, for example, a standardization process, even just on test names on imaging files. And right now isn't addressed by USCDI, right? Like, just figuring out what the canonical name for chest X-ray right now is essentially a free text field. So
no, it's not. No, let me correct you. It's not. There is an, because ACR, NEMA, and Reagan Street have defined 6,000 terms for the test names for the radiology studies, and HL7 diagnostic FHIR recommends those LOINC codes for that purpose. And to cover the text report, the narrative report.
So I think I agree. But the actual usage right now out in the field does not comply to those things. So maybe what I'm saying would be helpful.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So we scroll down to the contact comment on page 10, let's look at that one. I think that this is probably the place where this belongs, this discussion. So scroll down just a bit. Jack has another comment on page 10. There we go. That one there. So I think this is where we are.
This is exactly, I think, just what Clem and I were talking about.
Right. I guess,
given that we have this section about radiology orders, that is hard to not talk about DICOM, et cetera. But it would also be weird to leave all the imaging out.
Yeah, so I think the point you're making is for labs, we're saying, hey, you know, CLIA-based labs, right, like basically any lab provider, we're recommending that there be assurances and policies and procedures, incentives put in place so that labs actually send things in LOINC, whereas we're silent on, for example, what imaging producers should do. So, for example, are we saying that a radiology unit that produces imaging reports but doesn't tag its own images out with the LOINC code to say this is a chest X-ray or, you know, this is a head CT contrast, that they, you know, what are we, basically we're silent there, right? And silent means we're not recommending anything. Does that sound about right that your recommendation is like there could be standards, but it doesn't really mean much if nobody's using them?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, it's a vicious cycle. You know, if you don't say you got to use them, you won't use them. But there are some places using them currently, and they are specified in the fire spec, which is specified as in the regulations. They are specified in the diagnostic report. So, and they're also specified in CDA. So I think there's some specification already in regulation.
I think but realistically, imaging reports are typically done as notes, not as, you know, typical observations, right? Like, you know, in fire speak, you're not going to get a chest X-ray report when you do an observation query. The idea there is you would get that as a document reference search, looking for a note. So I guess this gets into, didn't we just have a discussion in USCDI and proposed rules of, you know, the types of notes and what the LOINC code should be? The idea, and we define like 10 or 12 things you should classify it as. If we reach into there, we're saying instead of like having 12 codes you should use 12 plus like 4,000, and you should classify down to that LOINC level. That would be the recommendation we'd be making if that is. It would be conventional to what the other task forces recommended there.
Actually, I didn't get that. I got that they had to code specifically notes under the physician's notes, and there's a gazillion codes for them as well, Mike.
Ken, this is Terry. I don't think we called out any codes. We just called out note types.
Yeah.
Very high level.
But the regulations, I think, do through their dependence on fire.
Depends on fire's binding level, right? If it's extensible, which means, like, you know, if there is an appropriate LOINC code, you must, or if it's more like, recommended, which is, like, we recommend you use LOINC, but realistically, you can use whatever you want.
I think in the diagnostic report, it's higher strength than you'd use whatever you want. No, I think it's at least extensible, though.
Well,
if you don't have that specificity, you can't find them easily.
Yeah. And just as a, just maybe as a pause and just thinking of how we're going to go through these, going over individual comments, I think is important. What it also is indicating is it's going to take a lot of time. I wonder if we should, for the upcoming calls, go with the plan that members need to review the documents beforehand, put in comments and suggested changes for anything they want changed. And we will assume, since we have reviewed these over and over again, that if you don't put in a comment, you are agreeing to them. Because I think we just have to do it given the time individual comments are taking to adjudicate. So maybe let's plan on that kind of an approach. And of course, if we have extra time, we'll just, you know, review them as a group. But I think we have to do that. That being said, this notion of, you know, how do we recommend that the imaging studies always are encoded with LOINC indicating what type. That's a pretty big one. Do we feel that that really should be something that at this point we should say should be mandated, or should it be something we say we should recommend?
So we have in this, I just realized that we hadn't indented these sub bullets here.
Uh-huh.
So this recommendation is support the harmonization, advancement, and consensus development of standards based catalogs of orderable tests. I think that's just what you're getting at, Jack, with mappings to associated code systems and codes with special emphasis on the following. And we say lab use LOINC and A-LOINC, and then we talk about lab order details, radiology order details. Should we say lab and imaging orders using LOINC? Does LOINC provide that?
But imaging, would we expect imaging to be ordered, the order, but would it be LOINC or would it be SNOMED?
Well, it's generally this. No, it's not SNOMED. Not in the U.S.
For lab ordering. For imaging ordering. Isn't it usually,
typically CPT. CPT generally. You could do it via LOINC.
Which is awful.
LOINC would be better. CPT doesn't provide the granularity that people need to be able, which is why people create custom order.
Yeah, CPT provides plenty of granularity for most imaging orders. But it doesn't provide all of the detail that's needed for actually conducting the image, which is why you need the notes.
And it is biased towards payment orienting, which is why it's used by the ordering physicians, because they want payment to happen.
Clem would probably also notice better, but Radlex is also frequently used by a lot of commercial vendors.
That's the point I was trying to make. Radlex has joined with LOINC, and they have a combined proposed set of terms. Radlex and NEMA, they are RSNA.
I think then we do capture this in our text. We are asking ONC to support the harmonization, advancement, and consensus, and then we specify radiology orders and order details. So I think we've got this.
Yeah.
We're not saying with whom they're going to harmonize that, but that they need to work on that.
Yeah, and I'd say just watching a lot of ONC-supported initiatives and other initiatives, that this particular part about orderables, it comes up in almost every project. It's come up in a number of DaVinci ones. For example, for prior auth, where the currently it says, what are you trying to order? And it says pretty much use any code. And you put in a comment saying, we should probably really standardize, and the answer is no, that's too big of a challenge. We'll wait for the next project to work on. So, I think it just needs to be prioritized, right? People have known for a long time the orderable catalog needs to be standardized, et cetera. It just, unless there's concerted effort, the can's going to be kicked on this forever. I don't think we're at a stage, especially with the discussion we had now, to say we should mandate a certain approach. I think it's probably too early. I think it should be we recommend effort be put in so that we can get towards standardization.
That makes sense.
Yeah, okay.
Clearly there's a lot of discussion,
Okay, so next comment. Again, Jack, thanks so much for adding comments as you did. Is on the section regarding, and I'm on page 11, results need to be available for patients and their proxies to effectively view, receive, and utilize. You started a comment, but it looks like it's not. Oh, there it is. I can't see that. Okay, there we go. Show more. Authenticate patients, authenticate on behalf of. Oh, you're getting into a whole other world here.
Yeah, it's just the things that you guys talked about all assumes this. It's not at all discussed, but this is also exactly what you mean by whole other world. But it seems like we're just assuming all of that will get done.
Isn't this authentication? That's covered by the patient-facing API requirements, right? I think. To authenticate on behalf of patients, are you thinking they're family members retrieving family members' results who are otherwise duly authorized?
I'm thinking about apps who are going to sit in the middle.
So big picture, my understanding of how this would work for patient-facing practically is using the US CDI APIs that are consumer-facing, a patient would say, I want this app to have access. The PHR, you would be able to log in with your PHR login and password, which would generate an OAuth token, which you would use to pull data in and out, or mostly pull data in. But, I mean, that's the mechanism. So isn't that already defined, I think?
Is that the requirement?
What was that?
Is that the requirement?
I thought it was, isn't it? No.
So in the current ONC 2015 edition, there's not a specified approach for authentication, though I think many folks are using the approach that Ken described. The proposed update to the ONC 2015 edition that we saw in the proposed rule earlier this year, specified the use of OAuth with the type of flow that Ken described. It's not mandated that a patient portal credential would be the approach used for OAuth. You could use a different credential if there was an approach that made sense, but because of the challenges of using a different credential and then establishing that match to the patient record, I would imagine that many folks would use a portal credential because at least the patient's identity has already been established prior. So that's maybe a long-winded answer of, I think that the standard used for authentication has been proposed by ONC, and I didn't hear a lot of controversy in the comments about use of that standard. I do think there's some initiatives that, you know, Karen is working on and others to say, you know, are there even more advanced or cooler authentication methods? Certainly worth exploring, but I don't think that's within the scope of what the task force considered as we discussed this. It would be a separate area to look at.
Cynthia has a comment.
I see. That's helpful. Thank you.
Yes. Hi. Thank you. As I'm looking at the opportunity here, especially with labs and images and patients having access to these results, in the ideal world that we can get to is the ability for us to allow a standardization pathway so that the actual image potentially can be in the cloud, that the patient can have access to through their portable phone, be it a digital X-ray, a digital MRI. I think we look at today so often, you know, patients have to go back to the center. They get the report physically. They get a CD-ROM, nothing that's usable to the patient on that CD-ROM. And oftentimes the orthopedic appointments for those images, for instance, are totally wasted because they can't get it to load onto their system. So, you know, if we just use the cloud and have our standard be able to have access to the actual image itself and shared readily by the patient, I just wanted to pose that to the technologists in the room as how readily we could potentially catapult to be able to deliver this to the patients near term.
I think that is a scenario that I was kind of thinking about. I think we're quite far away from doing that today. I actually just experienced exactly what you described. I get this DVD that has a bunch of EXE programs that can't load on my computer. I was thinking about some middle layer app, whoever happens to be. It could be Apple, it could even be Epic, it could be whoever. And then how do you potentially access joint resources, or how do you even make sure that across multiple institutions, these resources are either stored in the same place, or you can link everything together? I sort of probably overloaded the word authentication, but a lot of this is sort of implied in the patient story and a lot of the stuff that is in that section, but unclear whether it's in the scope of this particular recommendation.
I guess my point is that, you know, it's doable in any other venue. I mean, look at YouTube, for instance. It's very in film. We do it in our everyday lives and at a lot of other industries. So I would just want to push the committee to say, we can deliver this now. because the technology is there. And how do we get out of our own entanglements to be able to do that? Because that is a huge, like, I don't know who would just responded to that. They just experienced it themselves. But, I mean, this is an everyday occurrence, which is a waste an inordinate amount of time and resources for physicians and patients and families alike.
And Anil has a comment, and we'll be going to public comment in about 3-4 minutes.
Yeah, I'll just make a quick comment. I mean, Club PAX is here today. I think what the broader point that Cynthia and others might be making is that as the technology evolves where information may not be stored in a on-prem by a single provider, but it's out there in the cloud, that the consumer have the ability for that information to be standardized so that they can access it from wherever they like, and that the authentication mechanisms be developed with standards so that if a rural hospital chooses to use a cloud PACS, that patient can be anywhere and the doctor can be anywhere and access it. But the technology, as you guys have said, it exists today. It's just the standards that are lacking, and maybe that's our recommendation.
So I've
yes. I don't know who said that. This is Cynthia. I can't thank
this
you enough
Anil.
Anil, for saying it so clearly. And I think we can – I mean, how exciting would that be if we delivered this change to the marketplace, to consumers and patients? I mean, and patients and physicians. It would be huge and hugely appreciated. And, in fact, I do believe it would be a great priority for us to really catapult us into how because the technology is there, to catapult us to have the discipline to get this standard in place.
So Jack and Anil and Cynthia, can you look at the text that I've added here under recommendations and see if that begins to capture what you're saying? I added advanced technical standards to support secure authentication of patients and their designated proxies to support access, including via mobile technology.
Can you just include via mobile technology
cloud.
And cloud?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
likewise.
I didn't hear it.
Yeah.
Via mobile or cloud technology.
Cloud doesn't mean anything specific, so I don't know what that is. I think the thing that might be the barrier here is business model. The technology exists to do it today. You know, in Kansas City area, all providers have cloud-based access to all radiology results from the major imaging centers, but the patients don't, and it's a business model problem. Who pays?
Yeah.
Not a technology problem.
But
doesn't the patient pay? I mean, this is what's so frustrating. Doesn't the patient pay? The patient already paid for the image. The patient, now, the role of the provider of that service is to enable the image to be delivered to the patient. And we know that the cloud is the most efficient, cost-efficient mechanism to deliver that. So I don't think we need to add anything here on who pays to get access to that. The issue is that we owe it to the American public to efficiently get a standard in place that
it's not a standards problem. That's my point.
Okay,
is it's not a standards problem.
We're going to go to public comment because we want to be sure to give everyone a chance to participate. I think those are really good points. Let's make the announcement here and then go ahead with that.
If you would like to make a public comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press *2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up the handset before pressing the star keys.
Thanks, operator. Any comments in the queue?
There are no comments at this time.
Okay. We'll circle back just to be sure.
Yeah, and one comment I just have with this discussion of imaging results being available, I think the place to really address that is in USCDI to say, you know, if we feel that imaging results should be, you know, easily accessible, the actual images, then that's a USCDI issue to say, well, you know, this is why the actual image is important to be able to access, et cetera. Once you have that, then, you know, for example, if someone who creates a patient-facing app wants to pull it and serve it up in the cloud, right? Like, you could do that. There's nothing that would prevent you from doing that. I think the core issue there is a USCDI issue where there needs to be a proposal, assuming that that, and it makes sense, right, having the actual image rather than the interpretation being available. So, you know, some images certainly take a fair amount of space and bandwidth, and to make it that a U.S. CDI issue.
And could we also do it in so that we use belts and suspenders as a committee to say, you know, this is a remarkable change that we could deliver? And so is there another place other than USCDI that we could make it a standard, you know, that the patient gets not only the report but gets the image as part of completion of their service? Somebody even had said conditions utilizing before for the laboratory standards using conditions of payment. But I don't know why, you know, when it's so important for the actual orthos, or I'm using an ortho example because of frequency, but if the specialist physician is looking not only at report, they want to see the image as well. And and this is how it works, and it's broken, and we can fix it. So I would really seek our committee to figure out how we can get this done and done timely, because these images are up, and it could be so doable and transformative and cost efficient, and get rid of so much waste that is, look at Neil's situation. But I can tell you, you know, especially for advanced pediatric orthopedic issues like a digit transplant, for instance, families fly to these special hospitals, spend a couple of days in a hotel, and then the images don't work, and they have to come back. They've spent thousands of dollars in incredible stress, and there's lack of compatibility when, in fact, they could just have it available on their smartphone and access to any specialist they want to see anywhere. So I really would beg us to put belts and suspenders and get this one done. It would be a home run for all of us, and we could all be pretty proud.
And David has a comment?
Yeah, I think that I totally agree with the importance and the power of having remote access to imaging studies be available to providers, regardless of where the provider is with respect to the source of the imaging study. That's highly desirable. And if you want to use the consumer as a digital mule to carry the images on the phone, you know, that's okay as well. But I'm going to say again, I don't think the fundamental problem is a standards problem. The fundamental problem is lack of pressure on the imaging centers to incur the cost to deliver this capability. Some imaging centers in some communities have figured out how to do it. Kansas City is one city where this happens routinely all the time. Other cities haven't figured that out, but it's not a standards issue. It's a regulatory and or business model issue. I totally agree that it's incredibly important and it ought to be available everywhere. We worked hard in Commonwealth to try to pull this off, and we ran into business model problems that made it very difficult to get any traction.
I think we've reconciled all of the comments that task force members submitted on this first orders and results section. We've added a bit of text and made some clarifications. And again, we invite task force members to go back through this section and consider whether you want to make any other comments or suggested edits. But we've really appreciated all the input. We really want all task force members to feel comfortable when we advance this to the HITECH. The next section that we're going to be tackling at our next meeting, and I'm not sure I'm going to be there, is going to be the closed loop referrals and care coordination, which, again, the ONC team and the co-chairs will have a chance to go through in detail. I see Jack, again, Terry, a couple of you have gone through and entered some comments, and what we'll do is we'll go through them and consider them and potentially make, you know, just accept simple edits and make suggestions for more substantive changes, and then we'll spend our next meeting both following up again on any orders and results and then digging through the referrals piece.
And I think it would be helpful if comments are certainly very helpful, and members should have the access to also suggest actual text, whether it's in modifying an existing equivalent of a row or adding a new row. My suggestion would be to, if you can, to try to do that as well, to say this is the actual text that would address my comment, because then there's something very concrete for us to review and to deliberate on. I just think because these are the most tricky issues we're tending to add, right? Like we've already gone through the things that we're already, you know, pretty much agreed on. So each topic may easily take 20, 30 minutes to talk about, which means anything that folks are commenting can do to provide, like if the wording was changed this way or if we added this recommendation, whatnot, that would be helpful. Otherwise, we may run out of time.
So Terry, yours in particular, I think you've entered some suggested just edits, you know, grammar and spelling and things in comments, and they're actually, it's harder to find where they are. I'm seeing them better. I'm sorry. Those kinds of things are great because we can just accept them as they go.
This is Cynthia. Just on closure on the imaging discussion that we before you launched into how to comment, and you know I'm happy to comment when I can sit at a keyboard to do that, and we'll do so. I was just wondering of the people on the call if there is support to make a recommendation to ONC. That ONC consider the imaging, the images themselves is also making the recommendation that ONC seek to require that not only the image reports, but the images themselves be digitally open standard APIs and open access to both patients and patients' family designees as well as providers. So I guess my recommendation would be to see if any of the committee members would agree with making such a recommendation to ONC.
Yeah, this is Ken. I think in principle, yes. One question I have is, I'm not quite familiar how big these image sizes are. So that I would appreciate maybe David, Sasha, like folks who deal with these, like if we can get some more information on what that means. So specifically, right, If, for example, an image is going to cost 10,000 times the bandwidth and sort of the, you know, from a health system perspective, for example, right, if we want to support these APIs and have people have access, and, for example, because the, you know, imaging results may not be properly Lone King coded, which means the default is every single image you have, please let me search and retrieve, which is a reasonable kind of patient-level request, but, like, if a patient who had, say, MRI, whatnot, and pulled it, what does that actually mean? And is it going to be, say, you know, 100,000 times the bandwidth that every other request for things like allergies, problems, medications cost? I just would want to know that it's actually feasible to manage. If it is, I think it would be great. If not, I think we need to think about things like, well, you know, do we need first to make sure that the images are actually Lone-King encoded so that you pull the ones that you're actually interested in, not just get me everything because it's not properly tagged and you don't know which ones are which. And I know some of these images have like really many slices at really high resolution, and that could be a ton of data, which I would be afraid that, for example, that would, you know, that would be pretty substantial potentially. I don't know.
Well, I think the issue, you know, perhaps what we could do is do a sub technology review with those centers that do it. And Kansas City is a good example because it is being done, right, and is being done efficiently. And so why don't we ask those that are successfully sharing images to patients today to share with us the feasibility because they're doing it.
I think
the question is, you know, are we in a moment of time where ONC, through this patient access of the Cures Act, can actually deliver this system-wide to the American public?
Yeah, and I think we're pretty much out of time, but yeah, let's continue that discussion. And certainly I would strongly support, you know, trying to move towards that. I just want to make sure that, like, it's not going to have unintended consequences, like hose every other access to data because the pipes are all full now with people retrieving 10 years worth of their imaging data, which could be, you know, gigabytes and gigabytes of data.
Well, we all watch movies on Netflix and our kids' YouTube, you know, and it's video constantly. So I do think we can look at the how to rather than how not. And that would be my encouragement for our committee.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. Great discussions. Again, please comment and, if possible, suggest actual wording for how you want the recommendations updated.
And you can do that as track changes in the document, then we can just accept them as needed, as some of you have figured out.
Great. Thank you so much.